Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Do you know Dead Man Walking, the Oscar-winning movie, or the book that it was based on, written in 1993 by our next guest, Sister Helen Prejean? Well, a new edition of the book was just released yesterday to celebrate the 20th anniversary of its publication. Sister Helen, a Catholic nun, is here to talk about her lifelong work to abolish the death penalty and where the policy stands in the United States today. Sister Helen, an honor. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
And I guess I want to start by saying your book was written before the modern era of DNA testing, for the most part, which has revealed how often people are wrongly convicted. Has that been a game changer for the anti-death penalty movement in America?
It has somewhat. There are 142 wrongfully convicted people who have been exonerated off of death row. DNA ushered that in. But DNA is actually present in only about 25% of homicides. So it's not the ultimate magic bullet. It's the whole process about the death penalty that I undertook to write about in Dead Man Walking and to bring people to the really hard places. Here is somebody who is guilty. We have no doubt about the guilt. Then on the other side, you have the suffering victim's family. What does justice really require, and to take the reader with me through my own journey?
And I'll get to that justice question in the case of people who really are guilty. But do you think that the number of DNA-based exonerations
Yes.
has fundamentally changed people's public opinion about the death penalty? Because I think many Americans have realized, oh, my goodness, there are many more innocent people in prison, including on death row, than I ever imagined.
No, that's absolutely true. And it's definitely had an impact on public consciousness about the death penalty and punishment in general. We used to think we had the best court system in the world and that there was not a flaw in it. That has changed.
But you want to say, even when the person really did it, capital punishment is morally wrong.
Well, and without preaching at people, without saying this is morally wrong, take them into the story. And why I'm so happy that Dead Man is now being reissued, there's a whole other generation of young people who have to enter into this very, you know, ambivalence in their own hearts about the death penalty. You got to take them there over to both sides of this to really bring them there. You can't just preach at people, and you can't just give people statistics. My story is somebody who didn't know anything gets thrown into the whole thing, and then that's what the book does, take you over to both sides.
So make some of the argument, because some people will say, and I think the latest Pew study last year found a majority of Americans still support capital punishment, people will say the death penalty is either worth it as a deterrent or retributive justice, eye for an eye, is inherently a moral act. Is that where you enter?
Yes, it is where I enter. First of all, the Pew statistic, that's on the up-down question. Do you believe in the death penalty, terrible crime? And they go, yes. When people are given the life without parole as the alternative in that question, it drops. It's 47% for it, 46% still supporting death. So that's the first thing to understand about the polls, because it's a non-reflective kind of opinion. Here are the key things. We used to think it would be deterrent. Two-thirds of people believe that when we first put the death penalty in 76. Now two-thirds of the American public realizes it is not a deterrent. The retributive justice and what retribution means is at the heart of it, where I've heard DAs say to a jury in the sentencing part of a death penalty trial, look at that suffering family. Their loved one is dead and buried forever. He's alive. He shouldn't be allowed to be alive. Only his death will do justice for that family. That's the essence of the retributive argument. We're beginning to see, as a nation, we're beginning to see that it's counterproductive, that the huge investment of going after a few people to kill them is not helping us as a country. First of all, the millions of dollars put into it, and you're not putting it into law enforcement or all those. So there's a whole number of things that we have to look at in the constellation of understanding about this issue.
Sister Helen Prejean with us on the 20th anniversary of the release of her book, Dead Man Walking, now out in paperback, or out in a new edition, I should say. And we can take some phone calls for her, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you read the book, if you saw the movie, even if you didn't, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show for a comment or a question. And you've worked with families
yes.
of victims.
Started a group. Here was my big shock, Brian. I'm with the person on death row and their family. I know what they're going through. But when I went to murder victim support groups, the big shock I got was as people talked about their pain and their loss, most of them said, everybody stays away from us because they don't know what to do with our pain. So I realized they're really being left alone in this too. And we do now have a growing number of victims' families. When New Jersey did away with the death penalty 4 years ago, 62 murder victims' families testify to the legislature saying, this doesn't honor our loved one. They just see it as prolonging their agony and preventing closure because they wait for this so-called justice that never comes. I stand in reverence of families who have had a loved one murdered, and they speak out of their rage and say they want to see the person die. I haven't had a loved one killed. I understand that they say that. Sometimes you see them leaving the courtroom. A death sentence was given. You see them doing the victory sign as they come mm-hmm. out. And then the waiting begins, 10 years, 15 years. What happens to them?
You mean through the appeals process?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Florida recently passed a law called the Timely Justice Act that specifically aims to cut down on the number of appeals for death row inmates in order to speed up the process and presumably cut costs. You're not saying that might be a good thing, are you?
I mean, Rehnquist himself, when he was the Chief Justice, said, let's speed this thing up, let's speed this thing up. Notice where this is happening in Florida. And the popularity was boosted of this southern governor. And he has the power to do it. He has 13 people lined up for execution. It's interesting to note the disparity of practice. 80% of executions since we put the death penalty back are in the 10 southern states that practice slavery. So here you got a southern governor saying, speed it up. I know this is what my constituents want, and he's got the power to do it.
Ryder in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Sister Helen Prejean. Hello.
Yeah, the question I wanted to ask was, in terms of the cost, you just said that millions of dollars towards pursuing the death penalty, but how does that stack up against a taxpayer obligation for life imprisonment?
Yeah, what a great question. Every fiscal analysis that's been done about this shows it's more costly for the death penalty, and it's counterintuitive because you go, wait a minute, how much can a few chemicals cost? We got to take care of these people the rest of their lives if we don't execute them. And the DAs are the first ones to say that a capital trial is the Cadillac of the criminal justice system. Right off, up front, you have two trials, and the sentencing can last as long or longer. And then you have a legal machinery of appeals. Normally, no lawyer would be filing appeals up to the last minute and things. But when their client is going to die, they do that. We have a complex legal machinery. Take California. 722 people on death row. The average wait for execution is 20 years. They just had the Prop 34 campaign, and they almost put it down. And showing people how many millions of dollars do you want to put into a system to kill one person, and law enforcement, unsolved crimes, all those kind of things.
You are a nun, and let me ask a question about the church. You might not like, I don't know. The church is consistently pro-life, quote unquote, in opposing both the death penalty and abortion. But why are they so vocal on abortion, which always seems to be top of mind, as opposed to capital punishment?
Great question, Brian. And in my second book, Death of Innocence, I got to talk directly to Pope John Paul. And I said, Your Holiness, why is it that in the Catholic Church we stand unequivocally for the inviolable dignity of innocent life, but when I'm walking with a man to execution and he's rendered utterly defenseless and he says, Sister, please pray God hold up my legs, where's the dignity in this death? We need you to come out stronger to help the Catholic Church to be pro-life across the board, for innocent as well as guilty life. Pope John Paul actually did that. We see a huge shift now in Catholics. There's a group called the Catholic Mobilizing Network that works with the Catholic bishops who've declared a campaign to end the death penalty, and they're putting the troops on the ground to educate the people. We've seen a shift now in Catholic perception about the death penalty and seeing pro-life across the board, not just innocent life, but guilty as well.
Is abortion an issue for you, too? Because often in progressive politics in America, people are for legal abortion, but against the death penalty.
No, I mean, I always am going to stand on the side of life. And, of course, I have great moral questions about the ending of a life of a child before a child is born. I stand on the side of life. But, and I'll always raise that side of the question in that, and it's what it means to be pro-life. But also, whenever we raise that question, we have to also raise the question of the woman, the one who's under pressure, the one who doesn't have anybody supporting her, and that if we really say we're for life, it can't just be to be for life before a baby or to be pro-birth. But what about the child after the child's born, and what are we going to do for that child? That's part of the question.
But on the question of capital punishment, you are equating guilty life with innocent life.
Well, equating, see, in human life, if somebody dies at 10 and is killed by somebody and somebody 80 is killed, the word equating isn't real helpful when we're trying to evaluate the worth of human life. Each life is incomparable.
Robert in Hicksville, you're on WNYC with Sister Helen Prejean. Hello.
Hello, Sister Helen. I'd like to know St. Maria Goretti, who was murdered at 12 years old in Italy back in 1898. And her murderer was Alessandro, who was 18 years old, lived in the same farmhouse, tried to rape her. She refused, and she was stabbed like 22 times, and she died 3 days later of her wounds. She was later proclaimed a saint, but Alessandro, he was unrepentant, and he went to jail for, I think, 14 years, and he had a vision of St. Maria Goretti appearing and forgiving him, and later when I heard, when he returned home, nobody would...
And Robert, forgive me, we're going to run out of time. Is your question, how did that story of fact, Sister Helen?
Yes.
Look, I remember learning about Maria Goretti when I was in third grade. You heard it in Catholic school. And this young woman who stood up for her own integrity and was murdered because of it. The story of Alessandro, of course, is an intriguing one. The one who did that terrible thing, what happens? What should happen to Alessandro if we follow the thinking in the United States about the death penalty? We'd say, well, he deserves to die. But my experience, Robert, with murder victims' families, like Lloyd LeBlanc's only son was killed, he said, just embracing the hatred of killing him is going to destroy me too. So the Alessandro, the other side of it, is the moral question you're raising, and what should we do with him?
We have a minute left. I saw a sign at a protest rally against Citizens United that said, I'll know a corporation is a human being when Texas executes one.
Oh, wow.
So is your work state by state? You work in Florida, you work in Texas, you work
everywhere.
In the states.
Everywhere.
Where the executions in the United States take place.
Because all the people of the United States have to wake up to this issue, that it's an issue of human rights. It also involves torture of conscious, imaginative human beings waiting to be put to death. Got to bring it to all the people. Yeah, I work in all the states and try to put a lot of effort into the southern states that do it the most.
Sister Helen Prejean, her classic Dead Man Walking is now out in a 20th anniversary edition. Incredible to think that this first came out in 1993, and then there was the movie. And have you ever talked to Susan Sarandon?
Yeah,
Tim
absolutely.
Robbins?
I just talked to Susan last week. Tim Robbins, too. He's done the play of Dead Man Walking for schools to educate young people on the issue. It's incredible.
Thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.